the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals coverage site from the USA Today NFL Wire. And this is episode 360. It is the second of our opponent preview series. And what we will do in this edition of the show, it is our AFC West preview part one. And so we will have two interviews. One covering the Kansas City Chiefs and Las Vegas Raiders, the first two games on the Cardinals' schedule, and the first two opponents in the AFC West, of course, that the Cardinals will face. So we will start things off. First up on this edition of the Rise Up Sea-Red podcast is Charles Goldman, who is the managing editor from ChiefsWire.com. As the Cardinals will face the Chiefs in their season opener at home, State Farm Stadium, you get Kyler Murray versus Patrick Mahomes. You get Patrick Mahomes facing Cliff Kingsbury, his former college coach. The two are still close. Cardinals and Chiefs don't play very often, so this is the first time since 2018. And as a result, Charles is one of the guys on the network, as long as we've both been with the network, that I have not had a chance to sit down and talk with yet. So welcome, Charles, to the show. I'm pleased to have you on. First of all, glad to have you. How's it been covering a Chiefs team that has been highly successful the last few years?
A dream. I mean, I took over right ahead of the 2018 NFL draft, I believe it was. And obviously that was the year, you know, Patrick Mahomes became starter and just exploded. It was his MVP season. And it was just, it made things so much fun for me, you know, kind of learning and taking over and doing all that at the same time. It was just like, you know, witnessing a team I've been a fan of my entire life and have followed for so long, finally getting out of quarterback purgatory and having some success. It was just that was a beautiful thing. And to be able to cover the successes of this team the last, you know, 4 or 5 years has just been an incredible experience. I don't know what more I could say about it than that. It's just it's a little bit mind-boggling when you look at, you know, the numbers and the things they've accomplished in such a short time. And then when you consider that now, you know, they're kind of entering that like second wave type of thing under Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's obviously going to be different this year, but that makes it even more exciting.
So you've had four straight AFC championship games, twice going to the Super Bowl, one Super Bowl title. They fell short of the Super Bowl this last season as they lost to the Bengals in the AFC title game. What was the feeling at the end of that? What did it feel like? Like, obviously it was a very successful season, but it feels like how things have gone with Mahomes. It's kind of, have we reached a level with Chiefs fans where it's Super Bowl or angry?
Oh yeah. I there was a lot of anger. I think that, you know, any season where you don't at least make it to the Super Bowl with this quarterback and this team that they had together, it's a failure. It's not a successful season. There are a lot of good things you can look back on, but I think also you kind of look back on that, you know, second half of that Bengals game where it was just kind of a complete offensive collapse. It's kind of the problems that the team faced all season long just came to a head in their offense, and they just couldn't get anything going. And I think you kind of see a bit of a, we'll see if it's an overcorrection this season, but I think, you know, Brett Veach has a tendency to go out and attack the problems. And one of the biggest problems was the fact that, you know, outside of Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs didn't really have a lot of successful options in the offense. You know, they had a few guys here and there, one that you guys will get familiar with soon, Darrell Williams, who kind of helped pick up the slack when Clyde Edwards-Helaire was injured and he was good in the passing game. But outside of really those three, they just couldn't really get things going with any of their other offensive targets. And, you know, this year they kind of went out and diversified that after the Tyreek Hill trade. You know, they go out and they sign a bunch of different receivers. They kind of reinforce their tight end depth a little bit. They, you know, have done a few more things in the running back room to kind of get that unit looking a little different than it was last year. So I think overall, you know, when you look back to that struggle that they had in the second half and the offense couldn't find, you know, different targets and get things going, or some drop passes, some bad play calling even. I think, you know, they're destined to kind of work out those issues so something like that doesn't happen again this season.
What's the feeling on Andy Reid, who has had an illustrious career, but you know, he had all those, made it the NFC title game a number of times in with the Eagles, made it to the Super Bowl, faltered in the Super Bowl, and now kind of having that same run. He gets the one title now. Not that title is good, been to Super Bowl twice. What's the feeling about Andy Reid at this point? One of the greatest coaches we've ever seen, honestly, doesn't, because of Bill Belichick, does not get nearly enough credit, I think, in the NFL.
Yeah, he's, I think he's the greatest thing the Chiefs have going for them right now. I mean, I was on a radio show the other week and people were asking me about the AFC West and the competition. And I'm like, let me ask you something. How many wins do all the head coaches in the AFC West have combined? Right now, they've got 20 wins between all of them as head coaches, 20 wins. Andy Reid has 10 times that many wins in his career. I mean, and it's just, it's incredible to me how little credit he gets for the success of the team. And you know, all these people are looking at the, you know, the rosters that other teams in the AFC West have assembled and very optimistic because it's the off season. And I'm like, the Chiefs still have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Those are the two things that have made this team over the past four seasons. And as long as they have those, I think they're going to continue having success and great success.
Absolutely. So coming up next to the Rise Up Series podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's move on and actually talk about the offseason. The Tyreek Hill trade, get some free agent additions in the draft. Let's take a look at those. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, Best Star of Cardinals Talk on the Web. The biggest move, obviously, in the offseason was trading Tyreek Hill. And there was recently, and it happened quickly, and it was, I know from my perspective over here in Arizona, it was an absolute shock, especially, I mean, the number of things that the Dolphins did. But how surprised were you about the Tyreek Hill trade? And how much, I know a little bit seemed, there's some that came out that seemed to suggest that maybe there was a little more contention there than initially reported.
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised by it because I'd actually heard that there were some talks going on a few days prior, but I was taken aback by hearing that so much that I didn't believe it. I didn't think it was true. Just because, I mean, it's hard to fathom. You have a potentially future Hall of Fame receiver. You want to keep him with your future Hall of Fame quarterback for as long as possible. And, you know, going out and trading him, that just seems, it seemed like something that the team would do everything possible to not do. Right. But I think that, you know, obviously Tyreek Hill's podcast came out and, you know, there was some things said there. I just don't know how much of that is talk and how much of it, is factual. The Chiefs maintain that if there was, you know, any sort of, you know, concern about his touches or this or that, it wasn't relayed to them. You know, Patrick Mahomes came out and said that, you know, he didn't know that Tyreek Hill felt that he was being underutilized or, you know, this or that or the other thing, that he didn't let Mahomes know about it. I think that's something like, if you have a problem with your usage, you go to your quarterback, you go to your coach.
Right. So, yeah, the, Cliff Kingsbury, so like he, now the Cardinals have been in a good place when it comes to receivers, but like that, he's already prepared for week seven when D-Hop comes back. It's about the complaining about touches between Hop and Hollywood and Zach Ertz and AJ Green. He's already preparing himself mentally to get yelled at about not getting the ball enough.
Right. And I mean, look, Mahomes explained it in a great way. Tyreek Hill is just, he's a fantastic player. You want him to want the ball. Like, you want guys who want the ball. You want guys who want to do more. You want guys who want to win. So I from that standpoint, I get it. It's just the way that all that information was relayed. It didn't sit right with a lot of Chiefs fans, and for good reason. I mean, there's probably a better way that they could have done that. That would have been, you know, more effective. And I mean, honestly, had he said something during the season, maybe there would have been different outcomes for not just that season, but his career in Kansas City. You know, he claims to have still wanted to be in Kansas City, that he wanted to be there, that he was willing to, you know, maybe not be the highest paid receiver, this and that and the other thing. But it seems like that somewhere along the line, there was something that was not conveyed between the team, between Hill and his camp, and that ultimately they came to the decision that, hey, you know, let's sell high, get as much as we can for Hill now, and get him a deal that'll help him and his family and get us some draft picks and some assets that we can use to help reload, rebuild our offense, rebuild our defense, and, you know, we'll see what we can do.
How much do you think this changes the offense? Because Tyreek Hill, there's no one exactly like him. Anyone that you try to compare is basically, the Cardinals, for example, they have Rondale Moore. They see him able to do some of the things that Tyreek does, but it would be unfair to expect him to do, because there's really no one like him in the league. How much will that affect what the Chiefs are able to do offensively? Or will they have to, do they have to completely remake their offensive like philosophy now?
I don't think so. I think they're still going to be able to use a lot of the same concepts. I mean, I think they were smart to go out and kind of get the players that they did to kind of fix a couple of the issues they had. But Marquez Valdez-Scantling was one of the big free agent signings. They signed him to a 3-year deal. And, you know, if you look at some of the advanced statistics, some of the numbers, obviously his speed, he's the most comparable player in the NFL the last couple of seasons to Tyreek Hill from some of the things he's able to do. And I think that there's not going to be as much drop off as some people might think right there. And we're already actually seeing in OTAs, in mandatory minicamp, we're seeing the connection that Patrick Mahomes has developed with Valdez-Scantling. And it's kind of just almost through chance, because, you know, the Chiefs had a couple of minor injuries early on in rookie minicamp. In OTA, as Mecole Hardman was out, Sky Moore was out. So some of those guys are considered like the speedster types. They weren't on the field and playing. And then you get Valdez-Scantling getting all those reps and getting, you know, opportunities with Mahomes and building that chemistry. So you're seeing them connect on some really nice plays during practice. But I think just, you know, all around the receiver core is better diversified. I think that, you know, if teams try to take away, say, Valdez-Scantling, like they did Tyreek Hill with the two high coverage shells last season, they're going to have the opportunity to go and throw underneath to Juju Smith-Schuster. They didn't have a guy who could consistently do that and be that threat, you know, last season. So, and then even just all around, I think the depth of that group is going to be better. You have guys like Justin Ross, undrafted free agent, who, you know, has been a standout. You have another Justin Watson, who used to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a standout at University of Pennsylvania, who has been working in with the first and second team, getting reps with Patrick Mahomes. Obviously Sky Moore, Mecole Hardman, the most veteran receiver in the room. I mean, the Chiefs really figured out how to use him late in the year last year. And he's someone who's really deadly with the ball in his hands. So I think they're just going to have a lot more options than they had when Hill was on the roster, when it was kind of really, it was top heavy. You had Hill And your next best receiver was, you know, Byron Pringle, undrafted free agent. And he just wasn't as consistent as you would like your number two wideout to really be.
Right. Absolutely. Any other players of note who left in free agency, or were they just simply let go?
Yeah. Tyrann Mathieu. That's a big one. Which, you know, I don't quite know how I feel about that one yet. I'm someone who always thought that Mathieu was, you know, on, off the field, just an incredible player person for Kansas City. And it was tough to see him go. And, you know, the team really didn't seem to, I guess, make much of an effort to retain him, which I found surprising. They identified Justin Reed, Houston Texans safety, former Stanford safety. They identified him as someone that they could bring in and potentially, you know, he hasn't quite had a great career in Houston, but who has? And, you know, I think they think that he'll have a lot more success in Kansas City. But it's tough to replace a player and a leader like that. I mean, he was someone that really, you know, helped solidify that defense when he joined the team in 2019. And
well, and he has a really unique skill set in what he has, and to his credit, because the Cardinals let him go in 2018, because I'll be honest, he looked like just a guy in 2017, a full year after he'd come back from that ACL, he'd lost a step, he looked like just a guy, and he still harbors bad blood with the Cardinals as an organization for cutting him, even though they asked him for a pay cut. They take a pay cut and offered him more money than what he ultimately signed in Houston.
Right.
But to see what he did after that was fantastic. I mean, from a fan's standpoint, is that he went on and overcame that knee injury again to be great. And he reached even higher, I think even higher levels of play than he had with the Cardinals, which is great. Then, but you know, he then, in that sense, sort of price yourself out, or maybe he's at the point age-wise where they think that he might be on decline. Who knows? But that's actually, it's talking about like the Cardinals Chiefs matchup in week one, where, you know, if I were to line up the Cardinals schedule, Chiefs in week one, because we know that they're going to, because of the losses they had, so they lose Tyreek Hill, they lose Tyrann Mathieu, there's two major adjustments they're going to do offensively and defensively. I'm like, perfect. That's the perfect time to play them, because if you're going to score an upset, it's going to be when you have the entire offseason to prepare for them and they're still new. I'm not saying the Cardinals, I've predicted a Cardinals win for that game, but it's not like I'm super confident in it, but I like their chances far more in week one than I like them in midseason, provided that, depending on how injuries go.
And I think that makes sense, but I'll push back on it a little bit too, because, you know, you're mentioning, well, how different are the Chiefs going to be? It's hard to prepare for a team when you don't know what to expect. So I think there's a little bit of both ways. Like, okay, if we prepare and play, you know, the right way, we can steal a win, but you have to be able to prepare. And, you know, how much of what you see in the preseason from this team and Andy Reid and the Chiefs, you know, how much of that is going to influence, you know, what you prepare for and what they pull out of that big old play sheet that Andy Reid has when they come to town. I mean, yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup. The one thing I'd say, there are two things that I'd been kind of looking at, and you can probably inform me a little bit more about one than I really know. But I mean, first, you kind of mentioned it, DeAndre Hopkins not being there. That seems like a huge, huge loss. You know, we saw kind of the end of last season.
Absolutely.
How that affected the Cardinals offense. So I'm curious, how will they adjust to that? And then the second thing would be, you know, the contract negotiations and the seeming awkwardness between Kyler Murray and the Cardinals this offseason. How is that? I don't even know. Has he been reporting to did he go to mini camp and OTAs and all that stuff?
He was not at all of OTAs, but he did show for at least a couple of days. And then he was there for all of mandatory mini camp. He did not speak to the media at all, but it feels like everything the beginning of the off season was bad.
It's concerning, right?
Well, I think it was just a crap show because of how the Cardinals handled it. Like, cause there is no scenario in which, like, obviously the way the season ended was awful. Kyler was bad, but guess what? Literally everyone in the in that game against the Rams was bad. They were terrible across the board. And there were a number of reasons why it wasn't just Hopkins going down. It was a series of things that took them from being top offense, top defense to not doing anything really well. But I think everything started with the bad blood is when we had that Chris Morton report early about, and that came from the front office. That was somebody in the front office that leaked. He's a bad leader. He's a finger pointer. He's immature. Like, you can, RG3 said they did him dirty. Like, you don't do that to your franchise quarterback. There's no reason to do that in a year when he's asking for an extension. You know that's going to go poorly. I don't understand. And then, you know, he and Cliff Kingsbury have the same agent. It was interesting, that big manifesto that Eric Burkhart released on social media.
Right.
You know, talked about the continuity of coach, continuity of player, got Cliff his deal, 5-year extension. And now we're just waiting on the extension. Now, ultimately, you know, I think it comes down to, I think it was the general manager being stubborn, did not want to set a new precedent. Mm-hmm. You know, Pat, you know, Josh Allen, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff got their fourth year, got their extension entering year four, but it wasn't until July, August. And I think Steve Keim is simply just putting his stomp in the feet on the ground, drawing a line in the sands, like, we're going to do it, but you're going to have to wait because I don't want to set precedent. I don't want to be the one that sets the record for quarterback contracts
in terms of how early. Kicking himself now about that after the Deshaun Watson deal? Because I feel like,
I heard that what Burkhart offered, like, put the contract offer on the table for the Cardinals. The actual numbers have never been told, but I've heard around, it's been whispered, that was about 40 mil per year. He's probably looking at about 46 per on his average now. So definitely, let me get out of principle. You're going to do $6 million per year more, probably with more guarantee. I don't understand that. I don't get it.
It's interesting. I'm surprised because, you know, when the Patrick Mahomes deal happened, I kind of jokingly at the time said, wow, we're going to look back at this deal in like 4 or 5 years and it's going to be a steal.
Yep.
And that's what it's looking
every
like.
Every time someone resets the market, it's a bargain by year three. Every single time. Because of how that goes.
And that's what I keep saying with the Orlando Brown Jr. or left tackles deal coming up. It might look like a lot when it happens this off season, but in a couple of years, it's going to look like a deal.
Like, it's not just quarterbacks now, like with Aaron Donald's deal, Tyreek's Hill, first Christian Kirk's deal with the Jaguars. Just I don't know how that happened, but congrats to Christian. Great kid. Agent. Jaguars. Why'd you do that? The Cardinals. Hey,
I hope he has some success out there with that contract. He's going to get a lot of resent from the fan base for sure.
Let's hope at least he's a good player, and so it doesn't become like the Brock Osweiler of receiver contracts.
Right.
Ooh, man. So you've talked about some of the additions. So who are the main additions? How do they impact what's the moving forward? So you've got Juju, you've got Valdes-Scantling. You talked about a little bit that they add a little different skill set. They add a different element into the different layers of the offense, particularly Juju's ability to do things more in intermediate underneath type routes. So it's not all Kelsey and it's not all Hill down doing everything.
Right.
Who else of note did they add in free agency and also the draft?
So let's start with running back. We got Ronald Jones. Former Buccaneers running back.
Underrated back.
Yeah, played for USC. Was very good there. I think he just needs to have some consistency. I think he's had some up and down years. He had some issues with fumbling. His utilization in the passing game hasn't been a very good pass protector, hasn't been the best pass catcher either. I think that the Chiefs saw a bit of a reclamation project, if you will, with Ronald Jones, where they think they can get a little bit more out of him maybe than some of the others, some of the other teams out there might have thought they could. Then another running back they added in the seventh round of the draft would be Isaiah Pacheco out of Rutgers, who was the fastest running back at the scouting combine this past year. Really interesting player who played for just a awful Rutgers offense. And I think he has a lot of skill, a lot of the talent that the Chiefs have been lacking at the running back position, specifically just the home run ability and speed. They really just haven't had someone like that since, say, Jamaal Charles. Maybe Kareem Hunt had a little bit of that ability when he was here, but it really, you have to go back to Jamaal to find someone who has that type of burst and that type of ability. I think he's someone who's probably going to make his money on special teams, kick returns, punt returns, stuff like that, and kind of be worked in as a pass protector and in the passing game on offense. But he's definitely someone to look at this offseason, in the preseason, potentially as someone who could contribute. Then, at the receiver position, it's interesting. They went for size this year, which, it's been, I don't think there's ever been a time where the receiver group in Kansas City had this much size. I think that Sky Moore and Mecole Hardman are probably their shortest receivers right now, but Justin Watson, Justin Ross, Juju, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. They're all over 6'1". So, pretty big guys. That'll have an impact, I think, in the running game. And Josh Gordon's there too. They've got some big dudes, not to say that Mahomes has excelled at kind of those jump ball type of receivers, but I don't know that he's necessarily had someone he trusts in those situations other than maybe Kelsey. So seeing that, I think the offense, the receiver group, it's definitely going to look different. It's not going to be what the Chiefs have had in previous years, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think that change might, force some innovation, creativity on part of the offensive coaching staff. I think they're going to use more heavy personnel with a lot of the tight ends in the offense, because the Chiefs really are four or five players deep at the position right now. And I think they'll carry four on the 53-man roster this year. They did it a couple times last year. They had this formation, they called it TE Rex, where they have all four on the field at the same time. But they can do that because, these guys are running routes like receivers and it's tough to cover them because they're so big. They can go from like a tight formation with all the tight ends on the field, and then they can spread them out wide and spread out the defense. And, you don't know who you're covering these guys with, right? You throw linebackers on them and they're going to get beat. Safeties on them, they're going to struggle too because of their size. So I think we're going to see some of that next season with more frequency and some unique formations there. Really just that, like I said, diversifying this offense so it's not as top heavy, that they have a lot of different options they can go to and a lot of different ways they can beat opposing defenses.
So coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's wrap it up and talk about what Charles sees as the Chiefs' outlook for this coming season. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've got Charles Goldman on the line from Chiefs Wire, the NFL Wire site covering the Kansas City Chiefs. We've talked about last season. We talked about the offseason. But looking ahead to the 2022 season, what do you see our expectations for the Chiefs? They have a very competitive division. Obviously, the loss of Tyrann Mathieu and Tyreek Hill. You've still got Patrick Mahomes. They obviously should be the favorite in the division. They are. I took a look at the betting odds. They have they've actually improved in odds, but that's still, it is still the, it's crap. Who are the number one team in terms of the odds? You've got the Buccaneers, you've got
Bills.
the Bills, Buccaneers, and then that's plus 600, plus 700, the Bucks. And then the Chiefs recently on Tipico went from plus 1,000 to plus 900. So closing in as one of those favorites. People are looking at the Bills as the best team in football, but the Chiefs are still, I mean, that prime team. Right. What do you expect for the coming season? What's kind of your outlook for win total? And what do you think their chances are in the postseason?
Yeah, so I picked them over 11 games. I took the over on their win total. And, you know, it goes back to our conversation earlier about Andy Reid. I just think he gives them an advantage, even in a tough division, when you have so many new coaches and first-year coaches. I think having Andy Reid there is an ace in the hole, and that there are going to be some close games within the division. And having Andy Reid, having Patrick Mahomes, having that combination is going to allow the Chiefs to come out on top. Now, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period for Kansas City this season. I don't think that, you know, it's reasonable to expect them to just like come out of the gates firing perfect on both sides of the ball. They've got a lot of turnover, a lot of snaps lost, a lot of new players coming in competing for snaps. And whenever that happens, there's always a bit of an adjustment period. I think on the defensive side of the ball, you're going to see it quite a bit early on, because we've kind of seen it even just in these past couple of seasons with Steve Spagnuolo's group, that it takes a couple of games for them to kind of settle in and find their groove. And with a lot of new faces in the secondary, some new players on the defensive line, some, you know, second and third year linebackers who are now going to be the starters in Kansas City, I think there's going to be a couple of speed bumps on that side of the ball. And the Chiefs are really going to look to rely on their offense, on their veterans there, on the offensive line to kind of pick up the slack in those early games where there might be, you know, some skids, some trouble, here and there. So that's kind of the way I'm feeling with this group right now. But I think that they also are very confident that they can kind of pick up where Kansas City left off and get back out there and compete for more championships quickly as well. So that's kind of my feel right now. And we'll see if it changes at all in training camp. I mean, sometimes you get a look at the team firsthand, a better look at the team firsthand, and you have a better idea of what to expect.
I don't necessarily want a prediction, but how do you see the game in week one? Do you expect one team to be significantly more prepared than the other? Do you expect the Chiefs to be able to hand, or do you expect a good game coming out of the gate in that week one matchup?
I'm going to be consistent with what I've said this offseason. I was on a radio show, I think on Sirius XM NFL Fantasy. And, I said that I think the Chiefs are going to win with relative ease. And I feel bad saying that to you now. I don't want to hurt you.
You're fine. It's
but totally cool. I just feel like, you know, without DeAndre Hopkins, with, you know, some of the concerns going on with Kyler Murray, depending on what happens with this contract situation, whatnot, and how much that's weighing on him, that, you know, that I feel like could have an impact on the game, but mostly it's without Hopkins. I think that the Chiefs defense is going to have a little bit of an advantage there, you know, that rather than they would have if he were on the field, because he's just such a dynamic and talented receiver. You know, and we have a lot of young cornerbacks on the roster that are probably going to be playing you know, in that opening week. So having a player like that would be a huge advantage, and not having him, it's a little different. I think that Ertz can kind of take some of the heat off of that for you guys. But, you know, I look at the safety group and the linebacker group in Kansas City, and I'm like, I think these guys can match up with tight ends. I think that they can really take away that part of the game better than, you know, the group they previously had in Matthew and Daniel Sorensen and Armani Watts. So, Anthony Hitchens at linebacker, you know, Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, infinite upgrade at that part. And I do think, you know, obviously it think that, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road. I don't think it's going to be a pretty game. I think it'll probably be closer than, you know, a lot of people are going to expect. But I just have a sense that the Chiefs are going to want to come out of the gate swinging, even though they're on the road.
All right. That is Charles Goldman from ChiefsWire.com. You can find his work, of course, on that USA Today NFL Wire site. Charles, are you also on social media at all?
I am, at GoldMCTNFL on Twitter.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we will move on to talk with an opponent writer that covers the Las Vegas Raiders for the second of our four AFC West opponent previews and the final segment of this edition of the show, part one. So that's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And on this next segment, we have the second of our AFC West opponents who face the Cardinals this year. Opening the season against the Kansas City Chiefs, of course. And then in week two, they're on the road to face the Las Vegas Raiders. And to help us get to know those Raiders a little bit better, we've got a guy that I've been familiar with for years on the NFL Wire Network and have never actually had the chance to sit down and talk with him. I've got Marcus Mosher on the show right now. Marcus, welcome to the show, and thanks for the time, man.
Of course. Jess, how are you doing today, sir?
Been doing great. The two of us both run a Wire site and both contribute to the sports betting side over at Sportsbook Wire.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, actually talking over the air, other than, you know, messages over Slack, I think this is the first time since I came on in 2016.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I mean, I think I've been with the Raiders Wire since 2017. So we've both been there a while now.
So covering the Raiders has got to be pretty interesting lately. They had a successful year last year. They kind of pulled things together, but it was a case for a lick for the first half of the season was they either score 30 and win or they don't and lose. Take us through the last season. Then they got hot at the end of the year, won the four straight games, make the playoffs, wanted to lose to the eventual AFC champ Bengals. Take us through what went well and what didn't go well for the Raiders last season.
Yeah, first and foremost, so I got hired at the end of the 2017 season. So I've seen three coaches now, multiple team presidents, multiple scandals. It's just been quite the ride. But I think last year's Raiders team was maybe one of the more fun stories in the league that we've had, right? You have the coach resigns for awful reasons, and then basically everybody counts him out, and Rich Bisaccia and Derek Carr lead this team to the playoffs, and just they come within a couple plays of upsetting the Bengals in the wild card round. They play one of the wildest games that you'll ever see against the Chargers in week 18. I think Raider fans are very optimistic with the way that last season ended, the way that this offseason has gone, as to their chances of making a deep postseason run here in the AFC.
Take us through the Gruden loss, or the Gruden resigning. That was, my goodness, what a mess that was, one. And two, how did they manage to keep things together and even, at the end of the year, improve?
Yeah, this one's tough because on the field, I think John Gruden was doing a really good job of kind of building this team and being competitive. Because you got to remember, they were like 5-2 when Gruden resigned. They upset the Ravens on Monday Night Football. They beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Like, they were playing really good football. And then Gruden resigns because some emails got leaked in. He had to go. There was no...
Right, there is.
I mean, there was no...
You couldn't survive that in right. What we're going through societally right now.
It was just so tough because he finally got the Raiders to a point where they were playing the best football that they played since 2016. He leaves, and immediately you see a huge drop-off, right? The offense falls apart. They lose Henry Ruggs, in that time because of an awful car accident that happened in Las Vegas, where he's now being charged with DUI with murder. It was just, it was a tough time, but it was really more than anything else, it was Derek Carr kind of rallying the men, taking over practices, leading practice, you know, calling a lot of his own plays. He's the reason why this team didn't just sink at the end of the year. And actually they did the opposite. They kind of rose to the occasion and made it to the playoffs, which is still kind of unbelievable that it happened that way.
Rick, of course, Derek Carr, who has been at least around the league, has been a guy that isn't viewed as one of the top quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm.
He has the production over the last few years. He's definitely had the numbers to say that he belongs in the conversation. Where is he in terms of establish himself as the guy, obviously, and what does the fan base think of Derek Carr at this point?
Yeah, this is a really fun question, because I think he unanimously is not viewed as a top eight quarterback, right? He's just not. But he's not viewed as a bad quarterback either. So it kind of puts him in that middle range between 9 to 15 to 16, you know, just depending on who you talk to. But I will say this, there's absolutely no doubt on this team who is the leader. Those guys all buy into him. They all believe that he's a superstar quarterback. And just sometimes that's even more important than where you're ranked among, you know, NFL media people, right? If the players in the locker room believe in you and they think you're a great quarterback that can win a Super Bowl, sometimes that's all that matters. So I just don't think we should get too hung up on whether he's the 11th best quarterback or the 14th best quarterback in the league.
Makes sense. What were the obviously you go through the coaching change on the field. What were the highs and lows overall of their play? What was it that went well, and what was what kind of caused their meltdown in the middle of the season?
Yeah, I mean, their meltdown was really due to the offensive line. It's just not a good unit. They've got one average starter. Colt Miller is their best offensive lineman. He's an above-average starter, one of the top 10, 12 left tackles in the league. Everybody else is very replaceable. Their first-round pick, Alex Leatherwood, started at right tackle. They moved him to right guard. Still wasn't good. They moved on from Rodney Hudson at center. They played Andre James. He was a disaster. They have John Simpson. Denzel Good got hurt in week one. Their offensive line is what kept them from being a better team. But what went well for them is Derek Carr handled pressure better than he ever had before. And he was able to take shots down the field. And he was more aggressive. And when he gets rid of the ball quickly and he's not taking sacks and he's not turning the ball over, this offense can be really good. And I think the play of Hunter Renfrow in the slot really made them hard to defend, because he's just impossible to cover one-on-one. So when the line did hold up, this offense was really explosive. When they didn't, it really struggled.
Take us back to the Rodney Hudson trade. What was happening there? Was this a case where the Raiders wanted to move on? Did he want to get released? Because the Cardinals right now are going through a little bit of uncertainty with Hudson, because he didn't show up after a year with the Cardinals. The coaches have been nothing but effusive about the praise they give him and how important he's been to that offensive line and that offense. And then this offseason, nothing. Didn't show up to anything voluntary. Was out for minicamp, and it was not excused. Is there anything from a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
Because I almost felt like it felt the vibe was he wasn't thrilled they got traded to the Cardinals. Do you know anything of that story at all?
It's still a little bit of a puzzling trade for the Raiders end, because he was on a very team friendly deal. I thought he played really well, especially as a pass protector. And they didn't really need the cap space to just kind of move off of him. Because if you remember the way that trade played out, the Raiders were going to release him. And it was until the Cardinals offered a third-round pick that the trade eventually went through. So I think the Raiders started to see a decline in his run-blocking ability. And I think they just wanted to get a little bit bigger on the offensive line. Rodney Hudson's not a particularly big dude compared to the other offensive linemen in the league. So I think they saw some signs that, hey, maybe his game is dropping off a little bit. Let's move on, save some cap space as we can. And I think there was also some rumblings about how much is his heart still in it? Like, how much longer is he going to be there? We'll see. I still think he's going to come back and play, but I don't know if he's necessarily all that interested in the offseason stuff.
There's two theories for me. One is that he's been around long enough that, no, he doesn't want to be part of it. And
I think he had a baby over the off season. Mm-hmm. So he's got a young kid, and maybe it's simply, I don't want to be part of the off season stuff, because they gave him a three year deal when they traded for him, but they're working through some stuff. So it makes me wonder if retirement is on the table, which would actually vibe with what you said, you're telling us about last mm-hmm. year, that maybe his heart's not as much in it.
And when you get some of these older offensive linemen, sometimes they just don't want to do mini camp and OTA stuff, and they want to see what their body feels like in August. And I can't blame them, right? If he comes back August 15th, right, and he says, hey, I'm ready to go for the season, what are the Cardinals going to do?
They're going to say, please.
Yes, they're not going to find him. They're not going to be mad about him.
Their options right now are not great, because unless they go out and sign like a J.C. Treader, their options are Sean Harlow, a guy you might not have heard of. They've got Justin Pugh trying to play center now, and a rookie who wasn't a center in college are given work. So yeah, but that's some good insight through the Hudson trade, because it was weird how it went down, because the Cardinals, what they really wanted was Corey Linsley. They were in on the mm-hmm. Corey Linsley stuff, and they just got outbid. They mm-hmm. the Chargers paid them a lot of money. And so then they shifted to Hudson, who came available and moved on that. And he was a huge addition to the offensive line, which is
still
interesting.
Very good.
Well, and what's interesting, because they want to get bigger, Hudson was the change to a bigger center for the Cardinals, because they've been going with kind of undersized guys for the past several seasons. But with that, coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. And let's move to the offseason the Raiders had, because it's been eventful and it's been exciting. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm talking with Marcus Mosher of RaidersWire.com, one of the managing editor of one of our NFL wire sites. And time to talk about the offseason, because the AFC West is wild. Now, over here in the NFC West, we've been saying it's the best division of football for some time. The Seahawks look like garbage. They'll be a competitive garbage, but they look like garbage this year mm-hmm. as they currently are rolling with Geno Smith and Drew Lock at quarterback, and they got rid of Bobby Wagner, and their DK Metcalf's unhappy. And so I am conceding that as of right now, the AFC West is the best division in football, because top to bottom, holy cow. And it started off, there was, with the moves that they were making in the division, you have the Chiefs, you know, the Broncos go out and get Russell Wilson, and then the Chargers go out and make some moves on defense to make them better, and it feels like, oh, those poor Raiders. And then, boom, Devontae mm-hmm. Adams. How did that go down?
I mean, this has been in the works for a long time. Derek Carr has been recruiting Devontae Adams to Las Vegas for a while, and it sounds like Adams has wanted to leave for a while as well. There's been reports that he tried to get traded in 2021 before the season started. There's a lot of appeal to Las Vegas for players. That's where a lot of players want to live. And I don't blame them at all. And then when you get away from Green Bay, you get to go play with your former teammate and Derek Carr. It was just, it made too much sense. So the Raiders were happy to give away their first round pick this year and a second round pick to go get him, because they weren't convinced that, first of all, there was going to be a receiver available to them, you know, at pick 22. They would have been right? Five receivers right off the board in the
right
top 20.
Cardinals were in the same boat when they got traded for Hollywood.
Right, and they wanted somebody that they thought could come in and produce right away. And Devontae Adams can. And now when you've got Devontae Adams out wide, you've got Hunter Renfrow in the slot, one of the best pure slot receivers in the NFL, and Darren Waller, one of the better mismatched tight ends. Suddenly, that's a complete offense of skill players, right? Now the offense can finally function the way it's designed.
And the running game's not bad either. You've got a couple of correct talented running backs there. You've got Josh Jacobs, Kenyon Drake coming back from injury. Mm-hmm. That's not bad.
No, and Josh Jacobs is a Pro Bowl running back, had a nice season last year. Kenyon Drake a little bit banged up, but they've got weapons all over the place. And that's what they wanted. They wanted somebody that could kind of finish off their offense, and that's what Devontae Adams can do.
Defensively, they go out and they make moves as well, as they take Chandler Jones. I mean, he's still Pro Bowl level. He's not what he was. He had five sacks in the season opener, 10.5 last year. He's the Cardinals' all-time franchise leader in sacks. And now he's gone. Yeah. You pair him with Max Crosby. What does that do now in that division when
that if, with all the offense that's in that division, that was a really nice move to combat the quarterbacks that are on those other teams, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert.
Yeah, this one is tough for me. And I'd actually like some of your thoughts here because we're working on an article right now about the most underrated and most overrated player for every team. And actually, Chandler Jones was my nomination for the most overrated player for the Raiders for that reason that you just mentioned, right? He had 5.5 sacks, you know, the other 16 weeks of the season last year. I just wonder, like, is his days of being a true alpha pass rusher over? They might be. But if he's the number two on this team and he's only seen, you know, single team blocks and he's not getting chipped all the time because that's what Max Crosby is dealing with, maybe he can have a little bit of a resurgence. But I don't know. I'm just not sure how much of an upgrade he is over like Yannick Ngakoue, who they had last year.
I think it's a really good fit for Jones personally. I think he is seeing in part, he's seeing some of his athletic mortality because one, he has a familiarity with that coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even talk about the change of the coaching staff. We'll get that into just a second. But he's about legacy right now because he's going to be on a competitive team that's going to be battling for the playoffs and potentially Super Bowl. That's the hope. But I think he also knows that to be able to produce at the level he wants to be known as a Hall of Fame rusher, he might, like, there are some games where you could see the impact and there are some games he just disappeared. But he has been, for 5 years, 6 years, the focal point of opposing offenses and their blocking schemes. And when you make him a number two, I think he still is a double-digit sack guy. And yeah, I think that's a really nice move.
I think what the Raiders are hoping here for is like what happened with DeMarcus Ware when he went to the Broncos. So DeMarcus Ware was 32 when he signed with the Broncos, and he suddenly became the number two to Von Miller. And you saw him have 10 sacks and be really good in the playoffs and make a bunch of big plays. I think that's what they're hoping for. Yeah. They don't need him to be the guy that gets 10 pressures a game.
They don't need him to be the 20 sack guy.
Right. They just need in big moments for him to be able to beat the left tackle cleanly, one-on-one.
And I think he's got the length and he's got the moves. He's still very capable. Yes. Definitely.
It's just how much enough of an upgrade is he over Yannick Ngakoue? We'll see. I'm optimistic about it, but I'm not hopeful that – I think too many Raider fans are thinking that he's going to be the version of a player that we saw like in 2018, 2019. Not going
to
happen.
No, not likely. Now, let's go back to the coaching change because you bring in an ex-Patriots crew. What is the – well, especially after making the playoffs, after all the coaching unrest, after the resigning, and then what is sort of the feeling about – the Josh McDaniel coaching staff?
Yeah, it's Patriots West, right? Their new GM, Dave Ziegler, comes from the Patriots. Josh McDaniel is going to be the head coach and really the offensive coordinator here. I think there's a lot of optimism. I think there a lot of people are excited about the way that Josh McDaniels has, you know, done the offseason so far. He's not like Bill Belichick, and he's not like a lot of the Bill Belichick assistants before where they try to establish this New England culture, and they just try to be a hard – you know what, about everything. I think Josh McDaniels is more of a player's coach, right? And I think the guys are really excited to work with him. Again, a lot of optimism here, but I want people to be a little cautious. It's going to take some time here. I know people are penciling them into making the playoffs this year, maybe being a Super Bowl contender. It's going to take a year or two for McDaniels to get his system in here, for Patrick Graham to kind of teach these guys his defensive scheme. Just be patient.
Looking at the free agency, so we talked about the big moves, the trade for Davante Adams, the addition of Chandler Jones. Were there any impact losses that the Raiders suffered?
Yeah, their biggest one was Casey Hayward, their cornerback who they signed from the Chargers last offseason. You can make a case that he was the second best defensive player on their team last year outside of Max Crosby. He was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. He leaves for Atlanta in free agency. And they don't really have anybody to replace him. Trayvon Mullen is going into the final year of his contract. He missed a lot of the season last year. They're relying on Anthony Everett. They're relying on Nate Hobbs, a second-year corner. Casey Hayward, his loss is going to be a big one for this defense.
Any, you mentioned some of the additions, but there's, who are the biggest additions? Is Everett one of those guys? Athletically, he's fantastic, but like on the other side, if you increase the pass rush up front, that makes your cornerbacks better. Who knows? But who are the other additions that they made? So we've mentioned Davante Adams, Chandler Jones. Anybody else of note?
Well, we should mention Rakusin, who is who they acquired in the Yannick Ngakoue trade. Another cornerback that was selected in 2019. Some first round buzz, but the Raiders believe that he can be even better in Patrick Graham's defense. They are counting on him and Mullen. Again, both of those guys going into the final year of their contracts to be solid. They don't need them to be superstars, and they know they're not going to slow down the Chargers and the Chiefs, and they're not going to hold them under 25 points. They get that. They just can't be awful. And there was too many times over the last 2 years, their secondary was awful. So keep an eye on Trayvon Mullen, Rakusin, maybe some Anthony Everett, who played a bunch of snaps from Baltimore last year. Those are really the three outside corners that they need to play well.
And then we go to the draft. They don't get to play in the draft till round three, and happily to do so, because as the Cardinals have said a couple of times, like they said last year, they love their third round pick in Rodney Hudson, or they love their second round pick in DeAndre Hopkins. And you know, your top two picks are Davante Adams, and that's probably better
that's
than
it.
That's enough. That's enough. Yeah. But they start in the third round with Memphis offensive lineman Dylan Parham, a guy that was especially among draft Twitter and a lot of the more analytic sites, a guy that people really liked. We see a focus on the running game and the offensive and defensive lines, starting with Dylan Parham in the third round, Zamir White, running back out of Georgia. Then going with defensive lineman Neil Farrell out of LSU, defensive lineman Matthew Butler out of Tennessee, Thayer Munford, tackle out of Ohio State, a running back, Britton Brown out of UCLA. And who of that group is expected to make any real contribution, meaningful contribution in 2022?
Yeah, I don't expect Dylan Parham to start the season unless he just looks absolutely phenomenal in camp. I think Zamir White has a chance to be the third running back, although we kind of know that Josh McDaniels likes to be patient with those running backs. He likes to redshirt them a little bit. So I'm looking at Neil Farrell from LSU. The run defense was awful for the Raiders last year. They could not stop the runs up the middle of the field. They brought back Jonathan Hankins on a one-year deal. But Farrell is one of the better nose tackle prospects in this draft. I wouldn't be surprised at all if by midway through the season, he's starting over Hankins. He's playing 15 to 25 snaps a game and helping with their run defense. And even Matthew Butler, who, I mean, I heard some reports that they were considered taking him, you know, with that first fourth round pick over Zamir White. I think both of those guys are going to factor into their defensive line rotation early in the season.
Building that offensive line. So you see Parham as a guy probably next year. What about Thayer Mumford? Is a seventh round pick. Is he just a hope that maybe he can be something?
I think you
gave him an A grade for that pick.
Yes. I think the hope is that maybe by next year he could develop into one of those swing interior offensive linemen. I think they like him more as a guard than as a tackle. And I kind of think his college film, you know, says that as well. But yeah, he's somebody that very talented, high recruit coming out of high school. Let's just wait and see. Like, those are the type of guys you need to gamble on in this sixth, seventh round. So their depth was atrocious last year. Like, when they had their starting five, okay, they were competent. Once they had some injuries, it was downhill. So if Munford can come in, take that seventh, eighth offensive lineman spot and just fill in the back of the end of the roster, I think that's going to be a big win for the Raiders.
Coming up next with the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk finally about the expectations and hopes for the 2022 season. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. Again, still with Marcus Mosher on the line from RaidersWire.com, managing editor over there. And Marcus, the Raiders are in a tough division.
Mm-hmm.
What are the fans thinking right now? You alluded to it earlier about this team. And two, give us what you think their floor and ceiling can be this season.
Yeah, I think the expectations are playoffs or bust this season, right? They've got to get to the playoffs and they've got to win some playoff games. And that's going to be really difficult in the AFC. And I know they've spent a lot of money and they spent a lot of draft picks to try to make this team better. I just think, Jess, there's a chance that this team is significantly better on the field, but that's not necessarily reflected in their record, right? They won a bunch of close games last year, and I don't know how repeatable that is. But I still think this is going to be a very solid team. I think 7 wins is their absolute floor, because when you have a quarterback as good as Derek Carr, you've got weapons and you've got pass rushers like Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, you're not going to lose a lot of games. But what's their ceiling? If everything clicks and their offensive line, you know, can be better, and Chandler Jones can kind of be a 10 to 12 sack player opposite of Max Crosby, and he can stay healthy and the young corners break out, I don't think 12 wins is off the table. And I don't think it's all of that unreasonable to think that they could maybe steal the AFC West this year.
It's going to be a really tough one. It's going to ultimately, you know, division that's highly competitive, it always comes down to how they do in the division. It's going to be hard. Like, while it is mathematically possible for an entire division to make the playoffs,
that's not going to happen. We know that's not going to happen.
It just won't happen because of the divisional tiebreaks are what make and break things. And so it would be, this is a team that could be really good competitively and struggle in division. I see kind of 8 to 12 wins is kind of their outlook.
I don't see anybody in this division running away with it. Right. Like, we've seen the Chiefs win 13, 14 games.
Well,
and that's not going to happen.
No Tyreek, no exactly. Tyron Matthew, so, that there's going to be an adjustment at the beginning of the year.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if the division winner is like 11-6, and then there's two teams that are 10-7, and the team at the end is 8-9. Yeah. And they are all, like, the point differentials all super close. It's just who wins these ends of the game situations. This is a really fun division, and man, the NFL blessed us with a lot of primetime games between these teams.
Of course,
should be a lot of fun.
Look at those matchups. I mean, one,
oh my
it's
gosh,
the Raiders. Yeah. It's the Raiders, but then you've got Russell Wilson. You've got Justin Herbert. Who everyone like? I saw him in college. I'm shocked. Like, I liked him, but I didn't think he was going to be a star. I thought he was like Blaine Gabbert, yeah, Blake Bortles type prospect. Holy cow, he's good. And then you got Patrick Mahomes, who is the
superstar.
Oh my gosh. The
face of the league. Yep.
Yeah. I have no idea. No idea how.
Should be a lot of fun.
That's going to be crazy. But at the beginning of the season, though, like, the Cardinals are actually, I think it's a benefit to the Cardinals that they play the Chiefs and the Raiders right off the bat, because the Chiefs they will be facing, that'll be the first game where the Chiefs don't have Tyreek Hill. They don't have Tyron Matthew on defense. And so there's going to be some adjustments. Obviously, the Raiders in week 2. If there's a chance to beat that team on the road, it's going to be early in the year before the offensive system is humming, before the defensive system is humming. And I kind of like I like where they play them. It's obviously on paper, it's a tough first 2 games. But tell me about kind of how you and the Raiders Nation view the game against the. I don't want a prediction necessarily, but if you were to take this game, would you say it's an expected win, a toss up? Would you say it would be a win, would be a steal, or it's not expected to be a win?
It better be a win, because as good as the Cardinals are and have shown to be over the last couple of years, they just don't have very many games where they don't have any freebies on the schedule, right? It's every week you're going to be playing Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes, and they play Matt Stafford and the Rams later in the season. I mean, they just have so many tough games. So your first game at home against a team that is at least similar to you, you better win that one, because if you start the season off 0-2, 0-3, because they play the Titans in week 3 in Tennessee, you're in trouble. I think it's a game that they need to win. I wouldn't say it's an expected win, though.
And I see this. I see a toss-up game with definite advantage to the Raiders, but one that if the Cardinals were to win would be a steal. Personally, I didn't predict a win in week 2 in my game. But granted, these were May game by game predictions.
We got a lot of time to go before that game happens. A lot of football still needs to be played out before we even get to week two, which seems crazy to say.
Right, and we know DeAndre Hopkins is not going to be there, but if they're rolling out a new center, that's going to make it. I see the Cardinals and Raiders on similar trajectories. I think the Cardinals have a better chance, although the NFC is weaker this year.
Oh, without a doubt. Yes.
So
yes.
You've got, I think, the Rams, the Cowboys, the Bucks, and the Packers are the clear favorites in their divisions, with the Eagles maybe able to upset the Cowboys in that division. But when it comes to three wild card spots, it's going to come down to five teams: the Cardinals, the Niners, the Eagles, the Saints, and the Vikings. And three of those five teams. I'm not a big believer in San Francisco because Kyle Shanahan is 8-28 with anyone but Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback. And so, and the Cardinals were ahead of all those other teams last year. So I like their chances. And in that division, I think it's a complete toss-up. I think that the Chiefs still have the edge because of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. But how the second, third, and fourth place teams, I think any of those teams could end up second, third, or fourth. And
yeah,
it could happen, but any of those could actually overtake the Chiefs. But I'm still betting on Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes at the end of the day.
Yeah, in the NFC, man, if you're 9-8, you're probably a lock to make the playoffs. full disclosure, I've liked the Cowboys my entire life. They dismantled the roster, and they're still the favorites to win the NFC East. They might be the third best team in the conference because that's just how weak everybody else is. So, yeah, if you can just not get into a super big hole early in the season, if your Cardinals survive the 6 weeks without DeAndre Hopkins, go 3-3, 4-2 would be fantastic. You're going to be just fine to make the playoffs.
You can find Marcus Mosher at Raiders Wire. You can also find him if you're into the degenerate world. You can also see his contributions on Sportsbook Wire, like myself. Anywhere on Marcus that you can be found at the. And now, granted, you follow Marcus, it's not just the Raiders, but you get Cowboys information as well.
Yeah, Locked On Cowboys, Locked On Dynasty Football. We've got daily podcasts over there talking about fantasy football, and then at the game day where I do some just general NFL coverage, talking about some comeback player of the year potential guys, maybe. Maybe some J.J. Watt this year if he stays healthy, maybe.
We definitely like that. Thanks, Marcus, for coming on the show. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We will be back at the start of next week with the second half of our AFC West opponent previews. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.